It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 150 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And we just got back from the Phoenix System Open.
Yeah, I flew in from Minneapolis. Carson flew in from Denver. We met up and played a lot of great games of X-Wing.
But that's not the only thing that's happened. Of course, Monday we got our first ever points adjustment for X-Wing. So we'll dive in and talk about, you know, the Phoenix System Open and our first look at these points updates.
Lots of stuff to talk about today, which seems right since this is falling on a landmark 150th episode of Radio TCX. Seems like a good time to kick off a new season of X-Wing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure excited to talk about this episode. All right, so before we break into the fresh points adjustments, let's talk a bit about that Phoenix System Open.
Yes, this event was hosted by Cascade Games at the Glendale Civic Center near Phoenix. And this was a really big event there. They were running, obviously, multiple games there, X-Wing being the biggest. And they ended up pulling in for the day one qualifier, 216 players.
Right. And in the System Open format, we have a day one of six rounds of Swiss. And every player that has a 5-1 or better record qualifies for the day two.
24 players ended up making it into day two, which meant that the top eight players got a bye while the remaining 16 had to play one round of elimination before they could make it into that top 16 cut.
Right, so that adds an extra sort of wild card round to the elimination cut. And of course, at the end of all of it, we have our champion. So congratulations to Philip Booth for winning the whole event.
And also congratulations to Phil for becoming the new Radio TCX Dream Crusher. He beat me in the sixth round of Swiss, preventing me from making that 5-1 cut. And he beat Carson in the top eight.
Yeah, very well flown. You know, he actually had pretty terrible dice. It still crushed me. So very well earned.
I think that's one thing that can be said about his win here, because in my game, the dice turned on him. In your game, the dice turned on him. And then in some of the other final matches, the dice turned on him. So this is really an earned victory. Nobody can attribute his win to his dice because they were just not there a lot of the time. He won on really clever positioning and just, you know, staying resilient and not getting knocked down by those bad dice outcomes.
Yeah, so congratulations to Phil Booth. He'll be going to Worlds and also going to the Coruscant Invitational as well.
We also wanted to give a shout out to the other players. They won't be going to the Coruscant Invitational, but they did secure a spot at Worlds. The finalist, Ryan Farmer from the Minox Squadron podcast, made it into that final table match, just losing out to Phil. Top four, we had Angelo Butera and Dominic DiCarlo.
In top eight, we had Christopher Little, Andrew Oler, Emmanuel Gambliel, who I had the pleasure of playing against in my round five. Great opponent.
And then closing out that top eight, we had Radio TCX's own Carson Ray. So I do have to give you a huge congratulations on the podcast, Carson. That was a really strong performance you had.
Thanks. Surprised myself.
I wasn't surprised. You're a pro.
But I will be proud to represent Radio TCX at Worlds. Hopefully you get that invite this season so I don't have to do it alone.
But if not, I think you'll do us justice. We also want to give a shout out to the two hyperspace qualifiers. On Sunday, they ran the hyperspace qualifying event, which was basically six rounds of Swiss, and the two undefeated players would earn a spot at the X-Wing World Championship. So a shout out to Ryan Frost and Drew Brody for going undefeated at the qualifier.
Right. I really like that about the System Open format. You know, you have that main event where you have, you know, top eight get invitations to Worlds, but you still have that second shot the following day in the hyperspace qualifier. I think that makes it for a really fun event overall.
And we do want to shout out Cascade Games for running a really great event here. They ran everything really smoothly. They used the Best Coast Pairings app, which really made this one of the best X-Wing events I've ever been to. This was the first time I've gone to a major event that uses this Pairings app.
Right. It allows players to check in and submit their lists via the app instead of lining up, submitting their squad sheets. And then you can submit your scores and get your pairings just using your phone. No need to line up for pairing sheets anymore.
And this really takes away a lot of the tedium and the extra time that's consumed by having to have tournament officials like go through paper slips calculating scores. There's a lot of room for error there. It's really nice to be able to submit scores through the app. Each player had a pin to verify the scores were correct so that could maintain the integrity of the scorekeeping, and it just made everything run a lot smoother.
And then, of course, Cascade had a great team of judges led by our marshal Ian Hamp. All did an excellent job. There was always a judge readily available when you needed it.
And I had a handful of small judge calls at my tables, and they were always handled really quickly, and the judges were super knowledgeable, so I didn't have any problems there.
Absolutely. There's so many nuanced interactions in X-Wing right now. It's great to have a knowledgeable judge team who were very well skilled to explain everything.
And lastly, we do want to give a shout out to Dion Morales from the Gold Squadron podcast. He ran a live stream, and I think he's going to run a live stream at every system open this year, which is a really incredible feat. He always does a fantastic job. His setup is awesome. I actually had an opportunity to commentate a little bit on their stream, which was super fun.
Yeah, and two of my games ended up on the stream. My round 5 match against Emmanuel, and then my top 8 match against Phil Booth. I would definitely recommend watching that round 5 game where I look a lot better than in my top 8 loss.
And I would definitely recommend watching that top 8 game because that's where I got to commentate. So, you know, in spite of Carson's loss there, it was a fun that. Time.
I made a bad call. I thought Phil was going to advance sensors boost and K turn behind me. And I put a bunch of my ships in a really bad position. And of course, he's a great player and, you know, punished me accordingly for that. Also, advanced sensors makes everyone look bad.
But, you know, if you watch my commentary, you can see me try to spin it in true Radio TCX fashion in a very positive light. So I think I did the best to protect you there, buddy.
I just know all my other games looked a lot better than that top 8 match.
All right, as always, whenever we cover a major event like this, we always like to talk about the winning list there and that player's performance. So obviously, Phil Booth took the championship here with his Redline Soonter Whisper list.
Right, and this was pretty stock list. You know, you have that hyper-efficient Redline with advanced sensors, giving it that I-5 repositioning, and then the proton torpedo that it can just set up at any angle. Very powerful ship. You know, one that went up quite a few points come Monday. Soontier fell, you know, a great ace at I-6, allows you to respond to all the other I-5s. Phil went for a more expensive Soontier, giving it the Predator talent there.
Yeah, and Phil running that pretty bare-bones Soontier fell did a really great job, both in my game and the games I observed him. He was always really good at lining up that bullseye firing arc to get the full benefit of both Soontier's pilot ability, being able to get that free focus or evade, as well as the Predator talent being able to reroll that attack die and really make Soontier's dice hit really hard.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you do watch my terrible top 8 game, take away from it Boo's amazing Soontier play there. He lines up the bullseye on me like 3 or 4 turns in a row. Really made me feel good. and then the element of his list that really separated out from others flying the same archetype was his Whisper. He's got the Juke and Darth Vader crew here. Very powerful, no longer legal. But he also included the advanced sensors system slot, which really allowed that Whisper to be all over the place, decloak in front of asteroids, and then barrel roll away before he moves. And really, you know, it's really hard to catch and nail down because he could roll out of most any position.
Yeah, this was one of those things that I think caught a lot of players off guard, including me and you, where being able to decloak and then when Whisper actually activates, she's able to then barrel roll either direction. So you could see Phil do some crazy things like decloak right in front of an asteroid and then still have a lot of options open with that advanced sensors barrel roll. This made Whisper really hard to track. And I think one thing that was really interesting about Phil's list is that he went with a more narrow bid than we've been seeing a lot of the time. He was only bidding 7 points with his list coming in at 193 points. A lot of these Whisper Redline Soontier builds come in the, you know, mid to high 80s. But what he said he was going for was that he would probably lose out on a mirror match where they'd have a much stronger bid. But being able to include advanced sensors and still have a pretty decent bid gave him a huge advantage against lists that tend to run more expensive, like resistance aces or a lot of the scum efficiency builds.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a great choice because a lot of the players were gunning for, you know, the typical build of this. So giving himself some extra tools, I think, was a very great choice there.
And obviously, in a bit, we'll get in a little bit more detail about how these ships are going to change given the point increases, not only to pilots, but to a lot of the key upgrades that make this list work. But before we get there, Carson, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your top eight run, because landing top eight at an event this big is a pretty substantial feat, I think, in X-Wing. Trying to boost your ego here a little bit. But I wanted to talk a little bit
Don't worry, Tim. It doesn't need any help with that.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about leading up to this event, what you were thinking, how you decided on your list. So let's get into that. You ran 5-1 in Swiss and then won your top 24 and top 16 game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I went 5-0 and then got paired against a Sloan Swarm flown by Bruce Enos in round 6, and he absolutely tabled me there. Luckily, I'd already had the 5 wins I needed to make day 2. And then, you know, because I was 5-1 and not, you know, perfect MOV, I had to play in the wild card round and scrum it out for my top 16 spot, where I faced Juke Phantoms there in the wild cards, which was a pretty tough matchup. Mm-hmm. But I was able to pull that out. And then I got paired against Bruce again in my top 16. And he was flying a Sloan list with Whisper, Khaki, and 2 Barrage Bombers. And Sloan's pretty tough against the Resistance Aces because they all like stress. But giving all of his team target locks is gross.
Yeah, and Sloan, of course, whenever a friendly ship at range 0 to 3 dies, you'll get 2 stress tokens on the attacking ship, which is pretty devastating for most any list.
Right, so I'd only played against Sloan lists twice before this top 16 match. Once against Asagraph in a practice match, and then that round 6 in Swiss. Both of them were losses. So I really had to slow my approach down and make sure I didn't get my ships in any positions where they were being attacked by multiple ships a turn. Because the power of those Sloan rerolls really accumulates pretty quickly. And somehow I was able to pull a win out there.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about your list here. Maybe you could just start by laying it out for your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So first I want to say that, you know, while I flew this list, I think a successful list doesn't really belong to one player. Usually it's a bunch of people working together on a list and iterating together. So I got to give a shout out to you, Tim, and Terry and Ken, who all helped me build these resistance pilots to their best ability. So I flew Poe, Nian Nub, and Lulo Lampar. Poe had Trick Shot, R4 Astromech, S-Foils, of course, and Heavy Laser Cannon on that hard point. And then Nian Nub had the Black One title, Pattern Analyzer, Elusive, S-Foils, Proton Torpedo, and R3 Astromech. And then Lulo Lampar had Lone Wolf and Trick Shot.
So Carson, can you tell me why you think this list was a good choice going into a major event like this?
What I liked about this list, one was it was hyperspace legal, so I could fly it at both events.
Makes things simpler.
An element in my choice.
That was great for the plane ride where I only had to pack one list. Awesome.
Absolutely. The other thing is this list has a massive amount of maneuverability. I think allows it to play against a wide range of lists very well.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, these ace lists kind of lend themselves to a more toolbox feel where, yeah, they're kind of focused on ships that function pretty well on their own, but you have a lot of options here and a lot of tricks with the upgrade cards you've included, like Trick Shot and the Black One title.
Right. The Trick Shot with the Heavy Laser Cannon definitely feels like a gimmick when you line that up. And, you know, after a bunch of practice, it gets a lot easier to line that up. I was able to pretty successfully line that up in most of my games. And I really like this Lulo Lampar, particularly with Trick Shot, just boosting his damage output. Lulo's a pretty squirrely ship who's able to get in some pretty cool spots, and you want to be able to push damage through. when you need to. So I like anything that boosts that.
So you and I ran very similar lists here, almost exactly the same, just a one upgrade card swapped out here. One thing I noticed having flown this list for a little while now is that while these ships are really great ace ships, they can blow up pretty quickly because they don't have a lot of defensive options.
Right. Yeah, these ships, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier, anything besides a one versus one exchange really is not good for these resistant ships. So you do have to be really careful, and you have to use your, you know, S-foils to get those barrel rolls so that you don't get too aggressive. You can control your range. That means you have to move past your opponent and use Lulo's rear arc. So there's a lot of, you know, maneuverability you can leverage, but to be successful, I think you really have to leverage it. And then, of course, you know, just stop jousting.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest piece of advice we could give to anyone who's, you know, wanting to try out this list, maybe doesn't know the game that well, or is trying to get some more practice in here. This is definitely a list where you have to focus on the ace nature of these ships. You cannot just point all three of these ships at your opponent's list. In most cases, you're going to lose out on the joust if they have, you know, any number of more attack dice than you or bulkier ships. You really have to leverage the repositioning. So you'd see, if you watch any of Carson's stream games there, you can see how he uses Lulo to try and outflank the opponent and sneak some damage in by blasting past them. And by just not ever trying to put Poe or Nian in a position where they're going to take two or three or four shots all at once, because they just simply can't handle that kind of incoming damage. But on those exchanges where you do just get Poe one-on-one or Poe and Nian shooting down one ship, that's really where this list thrives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Poe's actually the weakest part of this list. And so I haven't really spent too many points on him. Most people expect Poe to be, you know, your ace closer ship. So they're going to go for Poe first. And so, you know, he's going to deal some damage with that heavy laser cannon trick shot. And if he goes down, that's fine, because I got Nian Numb and Lulo probably on the flanks closing in.
Now, you and I both put the Black One title on Nian, whereas I think most of the Poes I've seen tend to have the Black One title there. What is your justification for putting Black One on Nian rather than Poe?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the most interesting choice that we all made with our Resistance Aces squads, was putting that Black One on Nian, and I think really set it apart, because that caught people off guard. They really thought that the Black One title was going to be on Poe, and that's what people were used to flying against. But Nian Numb, I think, can better leverage that Black One title. The ability to use that Black One title in leverage with a K-turn or Talon roll, triggering a pattern analyzer, recharging elusive, firing a torpedo behind them, all very powerful things. What I like about Nian's Black One play over Poe's is Poe's tends to be a more defensive Black One play, whereas Nian's is an offensive one.
Yeah, often when you're running Black One on Poe, you're going to be using that where you get caught off guard one turn, you've got multiple ships pointing at you, and you're just trying to get out of the way with a slam. Whereas Nian does get to use it really aggressively. You can either do that four straight into a 4K turn, or then a three turn, a three bank, or a three straight to link that into a Talon roll. It gives you some really crazy repositioning options and does recharge that elusive, which is really one of those all-star upgrades on Nian, even though it looks kind of unassuming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my statement on Black One on Nian versus Poe is Black One on Poe, you know, stops you from losing, but Black One on Nian gives you the ability to win. And you know, before we get done with my stuff, I do want to just give one last shout out to my round one opponent, Eli Yoon. Definitely outplayed me in the early part of that match. Eli, you're an ace of legend in my book, okay?
Okay, so now we're going to dive in a little bit into the point adjustments that dropped this past Monday, January 28th. Don't worry if you're afraid we're just going to read off a bunch of point values. That's not really our game here. We're just going to kind of hit the highlights and why we think they're pretty meaningful right away. Obviously, there were a lot of point changes both up and down, and we're going to see the effects of those roll out over the next several months as we enter the first real season of X-Wing 2nd Edition organized play.
Right. It'll be really interesting to see how all these point adjustments develop over the next, you know, few weeks and months as we move into regional season.
We thought a good way, though, to first look at the point changes is to kind of see how they affect different ships and different ship archetypes that are doing really well in the game right now. So I think it makes sense, given that we both flew resistance aces, we can talk a little bit about how those are affected by the point changes right now.
Yeah, I mean, resistance pilots in general not changed, except for the resistance bombers, which aren't really in resistance aces lists. But the generic upgrade cards did see some changes that impact the resistance aces. The big one is proton torpedoes. So now that becomes a bit more of a substantial hard point decision. Going from 9 points up to 12 points, that's pretty pricey for a T-70.
Yeah, and since Proton is a generic upgrade, we see this effect trickle down to a lot of other ships. It does hit the aces here, but thanks to the hardpoint options on the T-70 X-Wings, there's still some good munition options you can go for. Obviously, we've been running heavy laser cannon on Poe, which works really well. So any ships that aren't already running heavy laser cannon can drop down from Proton and save a lot of points.
Right. I'm pretty happy in general to see Proton torpedoes go up, so can't really complain that it made my list a little bit more expensive. Trick shot also went up from 1 point to 2. I think that's still at a price point where I feel pretty good paying for it. It was pretty undercosted at 1 point.
Yeah, but even going to 2, I was expecting a lot more. I thought this is a card that adds so much kind of recursive value since it can be used multiple times in a game. I was expecting something more in the range of 3 to 6 points total instead of just that 1 point jump. But I mean, that's good news for us if we want to fly resistance aces, because that means it's still a very viable card and we still have enough room in our list to fit that extra point in or two. We also did see a slight increase to Lone Wolf, which went from just 4 to 5 points. But again, not a huge change there, so shouldn't be too hard to find that extra point in your list.
Right. I just won't be able to run as big of a bid, I think, but that's fine. All right. Moving on to, you know, some of the factions that had a bit more substantial points changes. You know, we had a lot of strong Imperial finishes at Phoenix, and a lot of those lists were substantially changed. Most of the successful Imperial lists were flying some combination of Redline and or Whisper, both substantially changed.
Yeah, looking at Redline, which had proven to be probably the most efficient ship in the game, being able to acquire a target lock every time after it performs an action, Redline saw a pilot cost change from 44 to 52 points, which is an 8-point jump. Pretty substantial. And then obviously we also saw the point increase on protons from 9 to 12 and a point increase on advanced sensors from 8 to 10, which means if you are running that pretty standard red line with protons and advanced sensors, your list just went up by 13 points, which is a pretty substantial jump there. That pretty much erases any bid those lists might have, and it probably pushes a lot of them, like Phil's list, over that 200-point threshold.
Right. And actually, what turned out to be an even bigger change was the Phantoms all lost their crew slot and had that replaced with a gunner slot.
Now, this was an interesting choice for Fantasy Flight to do. First of all, this is one of the first examples of a substantial slot change on a ship, which is pretty interesting to see. It's nice to see that they have this in their toolbox as a way to balance the game out. Clearly, the Darth Vader crew on Whisper was becoming a bit of a problem, a little too efficient. So rather than costing Vader a lot higher to kind of take it out of the game, we just saw that slot swap out for the gunner slot.
Right. And so this is interesting. I mean, Whisper only went up 2 points. And, you know, that gunner slot Imperials does still have access to Force users. So you can still get that extra modification for your Phantom. You just can't get the Darth Vader synergy with Juke, which I think is pretty good for the game.
Yeah, this seems like a healthier decision just to open up the game there to some other ship options.
Still on the topic of Phantoms, we had 3 finishes in the top 24 of those I-4 Phantoms, all with Juke upgrades. Juke has now increased from 4 points to 5, so you can't fit 4 of the Sigma Squadron Aces with Juke in a list. You can still fit 4 Sigma Squadron Aces, just not all with Juke.
And this is an interesting way to balance it out. The 1 point increase on Juke on its own doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but for a list like the Quad Phantoms, which was each of those ships individually coming in at 46 points and then using that talent slot just to fit the 4 point Juke, each of these 4 ships were 50 points exactly, bringing them right up to the maximum of 200, which means by just increasing that one upgrade card by 1 point, the whole list goes up by 4 points, which now you can't run four of these phantoms with Juke. You have to either downgrade one of the ships and run it at a lower initiative to get those extra points, or opt for a different talent that's cheaper. So this really shakes up the metagame a lot, which I think was a good decision, because I think the quad phantoms was showing up a little bit more than I would consider healthy for the game.
Yeah, I mean, Juke's one of those cards where, you know, one is fine, but it compounds very quickly the more you add in. Because eventually you run out of those focus tokens or calculate tokens, and then they're just completely canceling your evade dice.
Yeah, and we've seen second edition really reel in the amount of actions most ships get per turn. So this kind of brings it back in line there. Since most ships aren't able to get multiple focus or calculate tokens in a turn, the power of Juke just really goes up the more ships you can fit it on. One of the more interesting point changes that we saw in the new release was a new method for scaling point costs. So we've already seen the idea of point cost scaling based on agility. Now we have three upgrade cards, Supernatural Reflexes, Squad Leader, and Prime Thrusters, whose point values scale based on initiative.
Right, and you know, Supernatural Reflexes, the biggest change here, scales, you know, exponentially on initiative here. Being 4 points for the initiative one and two users, which I don't know if there's really any force users at initiative one and two
yet.
Then at initiative three, you're 8 points. Initiative four, you're 16 points. Initiative five, you're 24 points. And initiative six, Supernatural Reflexes, is going to cost you 32 points. So that's going to be a tough sell to put that on Darth Vader.
Yeah, and I mean, already that's a pretty rough cost for a ship that doesn't even have a native boost. But even on ships like Kylo Ren, this upgrade card has basically doubled in point cost there, going up to 24 points, which we've seen Kylo with Supernatural Reflexes be really effective. It just, the question now is it going to be worth double the point cost there to get that same effect?
Right. And I also like Squad Leader being one of these initiative-based ones, because the value of that coordinate really does depend on the initiative that that coordinate is happening at. You know, we saw Null completely lose its talent slot because that I-7 coordinate was just too good. So now you're going to have to pay 10, 12, or 14 points for that higher end of initiative on coordinating.
We also interestingly saw the same point scaling for the card Prime Thrusters, which I haven't seen too much of out on the tables. But this one now scales up from initiative 1 to 6 at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And I think it's good that they're preemptively hitting these cards that could really be impacted by initiative. Though I think this might be a little costly for the effect of the card.
Yeah, absolutely. That one seems kind of too high, but I like the other two choices a lot. We also got an FAQ ruling on the Rebel Han Gunner interaction with Rorik Garnett's pilot ability.
Yeah, basically the combination was Rorik could bring Dash Rendar up to initiative 7, and then you could use Dash's initiative 7 shot and then follow that up with a Han Gunner initiative 7 shot from the same firing arc. Basically meaning you could, with a combination of cards, throw out really heavily modified multiple dice attacks against the same target from the same arc in one round. We've now seen a rules clarification that says the Han Gunner must shoot before the normal dash shot, which means you couldn't use that same firing arc again, which means basically this is no longer a list we'll see in competitive play.
Right, it's good to get a flavorful FAQ here. Han has to shoot first, like that.
Yeah, I think this is an alteration that nobody's upset with unless you are a really devoted Dash Rorik player.
We did see a lot of changes in Scum. We saw a lot of their, you know, top control ships be brought up in points. And of course, there's a lot of Scum control lists finishing in the cut here at Phoenix. Paulo Gadali, probably the biggest increase. His ship goes up 2 points, and then the Moldy Crow title goes up 6 points from 12 to 18.
Yeah, Paul Abgadalhi's token stealing ability has proven to be really effective, so we did see that slight point increase on the base pilot skill cost. But the more wide sweeping effect, the Moldy Crow title, which is going to affect both the Scum Hawk 290s and the Rebel Hawk 290s, that card has proven to be very powerful, giving you that forward firing arc with a value of 3 attack dice, as well as being able to retain focus tokens. Little too strong for the game, so we've seen a pretty substantial point increase, bringing that from 12 to 18.
Right, and, you know, I'll admit Paulov had to go up, even though I'm a big fan of his. And I like, though, that they put more of the points in that Moldy Crow title, because I think without the title, the Hawks are actually pretty fair. You know, if it's just one arc you have to worry about for those abilities and just two attack dice, they're a much more manageable ship. When it's the full sweeping 180 arc that they can just circle around and make it impossible for you to avoid, that's when it becomes very powerful. And so you're going to have to pay, you know, 18 points for that. And I think that's fine.
We also saw a point increase for the Jakku Gunrunner in the Quad Jumper, going from 28 points to 32 points. This is a ship that has proven to be really effective in competitive play. The inherent ability for those ships to tractor other ships has been really effective. And even though 4 points might not seem like a huge increase, it's a pretty substantial increase given that a lot of people running Jakku Gunrunner are going to run two, maybe three or four copies of it.
Right. This was a big change. And I think that price point looks pretty right there. Captain Seavor is kind of a new player to Scum Control, but a very good option, giving you the ability to jam during combat. He only went up 2 points, so I think still a very useful tool for Scum Control lists. And, you know, Andrew Bunn and some of the other crates were running a pretty cool Scum Control list where they were using swarm tactics to get Captain Seavor up to initiative 5 to provide those jam tokens. Pretty scary to go against.
And all of these Scum Control effects were very prevalent at the Phoenix System Open, so I'm not surprised that we saw some pretty substantial point increases for a lot of these ships.
One notable thing, though, for Scum Control is that Forlom did not change in points. Advanced Sensors went up 2 points, so that'll impact Forlom a bit, but still remains a pretty good choice there for Scum, so keep an eye on that.
On the non-control end of Scum, we've got a lot of those really efficient Scum ships that saw some point increases. Boba Fett showed up.
Really the efficient ship, right? The efficient much. Ship for Scum got a big change.
Boba Fett showed up in a lot of the Scum lists that we saw on the tables. And to compensate for that, we see Boba Fett go up in points by about 6, from 80 to 86 points total. So not a huge insurmountable point increase there, but you are going to have to tweak some things in your list now to fit it all in.
Right. The big change with Boba was in the way everyone was building him out, the common build of that Marauder title and the Han Solo gunner for Scum. This was the go-to build for Boba Fett, and those upgrade cards have been dramatically increased.
Yeah, Marauder's gone up from 3 points to 6 points now, so if you're going to want to get that gunner slot and that reroll out your rear arc, you're going to have to pay some extra points. The bigger change, though, was for the Scum Han Solo, who lets you, when your ship engages, take a red focus action. That's gone up from the very small 4 points to a whopping 12 points.
Right, so while the efficiency builds of Boba went up, I think Boba will still be fine. You know, only going up 6 points on the pilot means we'll just have to find other ways to build out our Bobas. I'm definitely looking at the Slave 1 title first. That went down in points. So definitely something I'll be considering.
One of the lists that was probably the most frustrating to play against would be the triple Upsilon class shuttle lists, usually running Lieutenant Dormitz and some other combination of Upsilon class shuttles. This one, surprisingly, was mostly untouched by the points change.
Right. I think, you know, this was really the first event where these shuttles were very commonly present. And of course, we still had, you know, Hart Schaefer made it into the cut with them. And they were all over the hyperspace qualifier. But I think FFG just didn't have enough time to really understand the right choice here.
Yeah, I think not changing these substantially is going to lead to some trouble in the next few major events, that especially ones that run the hyperspace format. We'll talk about this list in the future, but it can do a pretty nasty alpha strike that, thanks to Dormitz's setup ability, can hit you pretty much anywhere. So it's hard to play against it. So I would expect whenever the next points changes come, we'll see something that more targets the triple Upsilon lists.
Yeah, we'll see how the meta shakes out. You know, if this is the only list you have to worry about, you can tech against it.
But for the most part, I like a lot of the changes we've seen here, and it's going to be really exciting, especially for a lot of ships that went down in cost. I think it's a little too numerous for us to enumerate right now. But I think there'll be some really interesting changes. Hopefully, we'll start to see some of those less commonly observed ships out on the tables again. I think it should be a fun time in the next couple months as the metagame reforms to these new point costs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rebels especially all went down quite a bit. That's kind of interesting that most of the rebel ships in the cut were the ones that weren't changed. So it'll be exciting to see all the other ships in the rebel faction see more play. And of course, large ships across all factions went down. So, you know, make sure you equip your heavy laser cannons and other bullseye equipment, because you might be seeing a lot more large ships in the future.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. We posted some photos of the event there.
And if you really like the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the show specifically and why other X-Wing players would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going onto patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
We started rolling out our new Patreon reward tier, so anyone who supports us for 2 months at the highest level will receive the exclusive Radio TCX One Straight template. It's all set and ready to be 2.0 compatible, so if you want to get on that, please be sure to join us on Patreon at that $4 level.
Yeah, that was super helpful for all the boosting and barrel rolling I did this weekend. I want to give another shout out to everyone in Denver who gave me all the necessary practice games I needed for the event. It's much appreciated and much needed.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX, and we will talk to you next week.